Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to CrimeWire Investigates, an elite team of investigation experts along with noted crime consultants and attorneys often featured on the popular news programs for families of violent crimes to find answers and seek justice. The CrimeWire team, Vito Colucci Jr., private investigator and author, Denny Griffin, retired investigator and author, and Susan Murphy Milano, expert and author, are there on the top of the crime at the top of their game. CrimeWire is a place for information, news, safety, and most importantly, justice. Our website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in anytime during the show. The number is 646-478-0982. You can also join our live chat or email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. If you are a friend or a family member and you'd like the CrimeWire team to consider your case or put you on a future show, our email address again is thecrimewire@gmail.com. Tonight's resident CrimeWire expert, investigator Pat Caruso. Everybody, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hey, Susan.
Mr. Vito.
Yes, we're going to start tonight.
Well, why don't you start real quick? Why don't you just talk about your Sunday night show? Give it a little plug.
Oh, okay. Crime Time with Vito Colucci, PI. We had our first premiere show the other night. It went great. We had on Henry Hill from Goodfellas. And Steph,
like the real Henry Hill?
The real Henry Hill. Not
does
Ray
he look
Liotta.
Like any? Does he look like anything like Ray Liotta? Is he
no,
cute?
No, not at all. not really.
Is he tall?
But is he who?
Is he tall? Is he have any characteristic
no.
like the?
No, no.
Okay.
If he was standing next to you, you'd be embarrassed.
Well, I'm pretty tall, so.
Yeah, you're what 7'6", I think last night.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway, but no, it was very good. We're on 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern time every week. This week we have, what is her name again? Let me look at this. Susan Murphy Milano on. She's one of the guests. She does a great job on it. And a fellow by the name of Jack Garcia, who was Jack Falcone. He had that code name. He was in 24 of his 26 years with the FBI. He worked undercover, and he's noted to be the best undercover agent of all time in any capacity. So we're excited. We got two big heavyweights on this week. So there.
Okay.
Thank you
for considering me a heavyweight.
That's right. All right. We're going to start tonight, first of all, with the Mary Edna Badaracco case. Mary Edna Badaracco vanished without a trace on or about August 19th. 1984, from Sherman, Connecticut. In 1970, she married Dominic Badaracco. He reportedly physically abused her, leaving bruises. Shortly before she disappeared, Mary found out Dominic was having an affair. Mary made plans to file for divorce. When Mary's adult children from another marriage had not heard from their mother for several days, they contacted police and reported her missing. Joining us to discuss the case is her daughter, Beth Profeta. Beth, welcome to CrimeWire.
Thank you, and thank you for giving me this chance to be my mom's voice.
Well, it is totally our pleasure. I want to tell the listeners for a minute before we ask you the first question a little bit about Sherman, Connecticut. It's a very small town, not too far from where I live. It's in what's called the northern part of our county, Fairfield County. It has about 4,000 people. It's a very high-end town. It's a lot of hybrids in there now. I know how it was back in that day, but people that make some serious money. They have a resident state trooper that handles that jurisdiction. So that's a little bit it's always rated in the magazines as one of the nicest small towns to live in. So that's a little background on Sherman, Connecticut. I don't think I've even been there before. It's just a very, very small town. But Beth, we want to start you off by asking you this. I mean, you all in your family had a very close relationship with your mom. When did you know something was wrong on this case?
Well, in 1984, he purchased that house for her. He paid cash for that house for her. It was supposed to be her dream house after a turbulent 14 years of marriage. My mother raised his four children, which I thought was odd also. In the late 60s, a man gets custody of four children. So that wife was gone, the first wife. We didn't meet her. She was just, like, shuffled away somewhere. And
did she ever have connection with the kids at all, that wife?
My mother, yes. The kids.
Okay, so she was still alive.
Yes, and they would sometimes go out. I think Kentucky, I think she was. But, you know, we didn't really pay attention to a lot. I don't know how else to say it. We were just trying to survive in a very violent atmosphere. To say bruises would be an understatement. I have a hospital report that says severe hematoma of both cheeks. Patient states she fell. I mean, he constantly beat her. We would leave, my mother, my sister, and myself, and she would get an apartment, get a little job. He'd find us. He'd somehow drag us back there. And so 1984, I thought it was going to be a fresh start for her. You know, in the, 82, I had a daughter. I had my own life. You know, my mother was thrilled with a grandbaby girl. And, you know, she renovated the home. Beautiful, Sherman, 4 acres of property. She had baby deer eating out of her hand every day. And I just thought it'd be her time. To be happy.
But with the violence that was going on, Beth, when, did she ever confide in you guys, say, I got to get away from him, bring you guys into the fold of what was going on?
Never. We always left with her. It was just an immediate violent outrage. You didn't know what mood that man would be in from the day he got home.
What did he do for a living?
He was a roofer and sider.
His own company?
Yes. Richter and Badaracco Siding.
You know, Beth, in reading some of the reports here about the case, being an ex-cop, a couple of things jump out to me.
Thank God.
You know, we have this paragraph here where it says, Mary's car keys and her wedding ring were placed on the kitchen counter. Some of her clothes were missing, as were all of the framed pictures of her.
Here's
my question. The next line says Dominic claimed that he gave Mary between $100,000 and $250,000 to leave their residence as a settlement. Now, if I'm the detective in the detective bureau interviewing him, I'm saying to him, "Hey, a knucklehead, is it $100,000 or is it $250,000? This ain't $5 or $7 here. I mean, what the heck does that mean?" he's going to tell a cop, "Well, I gave her, anywhere between $100,000 and
$250,000. It's a lot of money.
First of all, it's a lie. It's something he's just making up.
But second
of all, I got to say to him across the table as I'm interviewing him, "What are you talking about? This is a $150,000 discrepancy. What did you give her?" That's number one. It's so just preposterous here that to make a statement like that. Is that really what he said?
He was friends with the police. He went to high school with the lead detective.
Right.
On scene, and apparently I believe I have a police report that says Dominic Badaracco told Trooper T.K. Brown, I'm just going to say it, Detective T.K. Brown, that the bitch took my money and left. And they believed that. And apparently my mother quit claimed her dream house that was hers to Dominic weeks prior for a dollar. So that's what he's saying. He was saying that was the money, too.
Right.
He's never really given an official statement.
Really?
And he's never been looked at as a suspect either.
He is. Yes, he is. He was just named by Detective Joe Bukowski as a suspect. And it
recently.
Came out in a trial. Yes, last year, I believe, or 2 years ago with Ernest Dockenhausen. He is an excavator and a relative of Dominic.
You're going too fast. Let's back up.
Sorry.
It's okay. So you guys go in the house, right?
Yeah.
You go in mom's house? Okay, all right. And she finds these things. She notices things are gone. And she notices this Cavalier that she wouldn't go anywhere without is in the driveway.
Right.
And the window smashed.
The only thing I can say is I believe my sister went into shock immediately because of what we've already been through. Through our childhood, she really didn't question anything, and she listened to him when he said, "Do not tell your sister." So I didn't know for almost 2 weeks.
But the window, the windshield, is the glass is broken.
Yes.
Does anybody remember seeing blood or anything on the front seat?
The police said that they looked in it and didn't see any evidence, which I've said for 20 years, where's the car, where's the car, where's the car? And it
the car's long gone.
Fell
and
on
where
deaf
is
ears.
The car?
No one knows. No one knows.
Did anybody try to track Vito, can you track the title and the sale with the VIN number? Yes, right?
Oh, sure, of course.
The state police.
Very easy in Connecticut, yep.
Really? Well, they told me they don't have the records anymore because back in 2004, I just have to say, God, I think, hit the play button on his answering machine, and he sent us down a hero, a real state trooper, who has really been busting his hiney and, you know, doing his job, and our investigation is very active, all because of this one trooper.
Oh, that's good. That's
and,
good.
But previously...
Can I make a couple of points to follow up on what Vito said, that this perhaps the state trooper, I'm sure he's probably thought of that, but
mm-hmm.
you mentioned two things that to me are, well, Vito's questioning about supposedly he gave her money. Did anybody request the tax filings for the year to see whether he claimed a loss for that money that supposedly he gave to your mother? And then number two,
would he claim that though? Would he claim that,
well,
or would he just?
If it's $100,000 to $200,000.
No, it's not a loss though. I mean, I think that he would just, especially
I would,
if it didn't
I would,
exist.
If I had an attorney, that would be one of the tactics I did is to summon the court, the tax records. Who knows whatever else is on there that would.
And but says if he was a roofer, he didn't file taxes.
Well,
yeah, I believe
but then,
really
but
nothing
then you
was
said,
done.
You said,
I said he might
that
not,
your mother signed the quitclaim deed on a particular day.
Yes.
That day should be investigated.
Right.
That
day. Oh, I
day.
Think the new trooper is on it. The problem is now he didn't come into the picture until 2004. Hardly anyone has any records anymore. The previous
well, no, that's, that may be, but people still have memories. But
mm-hmm.
But if no one pointed that out, he might not think to do that. And then has somebody checked your mom's Social Security number?
Yes.
Okay, that has
no
been
hit.
Done.
Right.
And has
yes.
not ever been used
no,
after she
not
left.
I believe. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Beth?
Yes.
An interesting part here, our listeners need to know, that a woman and her daughters moved in with Dominic less than
Thank
a week
you.
After Mary
mm-hmm.
disappeared.
Yes.
And then he later married her. Is
yes.
he still married to her now?
Yes.
He is?
Yes, as far
okay.
as I know. And she's
okay.
a reverend, I heard, through the rumor mill. She's a reverend.
She is herself?
Yeah, but I can't find out what church because I'd love to go to that church.
And, no, you wouldn't.
And the daughters now, obviously the daughters, how many daughters were there?
Three, I believe.
And they're all obviously they're all adults now.
Yes.
Now, see, if I'm involved in a case, I'd like to know if all three have a good relationship
mm-hmm.
with him now, or if one of them really dislikes him or something. Because, you know, somewhere down the line, like we talk about every week, somebody knows something about
mm-hmm.
this.
Mm-hmm.
I was
mm-hmm.
hoping you're going to tell me that they weren't married anymore, because that's the first family I go to then.
Mm-hmm. And how quickly? Look at how quickly everybody that she's moved in a week
yeah,
later.
Within the week, yes.
So this is something that he, you know, this is 1984, we're in 2010,
mm-hmm.
and CSI was not on the air, Vito and Denny.
Right.
Oh.
So it wasn't. And, you know, I mean, Denny, what does this say to you?
Well, you know, I just had a question I wanted to ask you, getting back to the money issue, you know, and the good points made about that money. Now, Beth, I'm correct. This was allegedly was a cash payment. Am I correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I'm just curious. Most people don't keep either $100,000 or
mm-hmm.
$250,000, you know, in their pants pocket. I'm assuming
mm-hmm.
if this transaction actually took place, the money was withdrawn from a bank account.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's been checked, any bank records, to see if there was a withdrawal made or if he had that kind of money to begin with. I don't know, you know, what his financial status was.
Back
but,
then, no one listened to me. They all, the Connecticut State Police just turned and looked the other way. You know, I have to say that. They just pacified me, and really hardly any investigative work was done.
Yes,
my mother
I knew
three
she was
going to
say that, Denny.
I had a feeling.
I have
the problem. The problem now is, you know, that bank, let's call it United Federal Bank, probably not even in existence anymore, no more
mm-hmm.
records. Because,
right.
see, the bottom line back then, it's kind of like, all right, show me the records. Where'd you pull this money out from?
Right.
You know?
Well,
if you had, and then you threaten the guy because if he says, hey, I had $200,000 in my house, okay? Okay, fine. Well, you didn't pay taxes on that. Now we're going to get you arrested
mm-hmm.
on that
mm-hmm.
part at least.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, there's a lot of ways they could have done it, Beth, back then, but they didn't.
They're not a nice family. There's many rumors. You know, there's 1,000 rumors that my mother raised his son, who is a supposed ex-Hells Angels member. I don't know if he can really get thrown out of the Hells Angels, but he's also a convicted arsonist. You know, these people are feared by the community, so this is accepted.
Do you have any connections back there in Sherman, Connecticut?
No.
Okay. So there's nobody that you could find out with, like, his new wife and the daughters or anything
no.
about their lives?
No.
You just kind of left.
Yep.
That quick claim deed is fascinating to me. Beth, do you have a copy of that?
Yes, I do.
And is it signed by your mom?
That's questionable.
Well, what I would recommend somebody do is to go to the, especially because it's a small place, the county clerk or wherever that is filed, and find out who was working at that time.
You know what she needs to do,
maybe?
You
never know
if
somebody might remember that transaction.
Or also go and look and check the signature against when they got married.
Well, that too.
Those files are still somewhere else. So when your mom got married in 1970, she signed the marriage license. I'm sure it's on file.
Well, we do notice there are differences in the signature, but we, aside from blowing up my spot, we're broke. So without money, you know, there isn't, you know, I can't afford a you know, handwriting expert and can't really
well,
pay for
I
my
would,
best.
I would,
well,
if
I
you
mean,
want to, if you want to send, well, you have the state trooper working on it. I don't want to intervene. But if the state trooper is not able to follow up on it, that would be a clue. That would be something I would like to follow up on.
Right.
So you find, and that's no charge to you. I'm not
okay.
That wouldn't be the charge. But I don't want to interfere with what the state trooper is doing. But what happened that day and around the time of the quitclaim deed would be very important information.
But Vito, in those cases, do people remember all that long? You know, that's a long time ago.
Yes, they do, under certain circumstances, because you don't know what happened the day that deed was filed. I'm working on a case that the murder was in 89. We still have people coming forward with new information that they remember back that day. If you can give them the right clue so that they can remember the transaction or there was something about the transaction. I mean, maybe she was crying. Maybe she was black and blue.
Mm-hmm.
Something. And
well,
go from there.
New leads are coming in. I have a family website, marybatteracco.com, and we are getting leads. So,
okay.
And I feel very blessed 26 years later that people are still talking.
What exactly. about where your mom worked? What about her employer?
That would be, you know, on the detective. Apparently it was rumored that she even left a paycheck behind. If you're fleeing for your life in an abusive situation, wouldn't you take that paycheck you just cleaned toilets for?
Yes.
Yeah, you would take that paycheck with you. So where is that paycheck?
And what about photos? Have you guys been able to hold on to any photos of your mom? Or?
Yeah, I have some. Everything that I have is basically on her website.
Okay.
Hey, Beth.
All right.
Tell us a little bit about this Ernest guy, just a little bit about his background with Dominic.
Okay. He apparently married Dominic's niece. And ever since, I guess I don't know about ever since, but apparently Ernest Dockenhausen is an excavator. Dominic Bataracco is roofing, siding, windows. So every house that they would get, you know, Ernest would do the digging or excavating, and Dominic would finish it up with the windows and the roofs and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And this particular property, Ernest had been talking to the police, and he told the police he buried 4 cars. And he knew 3 of them, makes, models, years, couldn't remember the 4th. And apparently all of a sudden, you know, he remembered, oh, it was a 1982 Chevy Cavalier. Well, that's the same year as my mother that's missing. So the trooper, you know, went to town, you know, did what he had to do, trying to find the car. and they pulled up three cars, not the my mother's.
And he got arrested just recently in April
yes.
of 2008. He was charged with interfering with a police investigation in your mom's
yes.
disappearance. Only problem yes. was he got acquitted at his trial in 2009, just last year. But,
yes.
you know, I mean, what cracks me up is, Denny, how many buried cars you got in your backyard? I mean, everybody's got buried cars, right, in their backyard. I mean, right?
Oh,
I mean,
naturally.
Yeah, yeah, of course. I got six or seven myself. I mean, how ridiculous. You know, how bizarre is this whole thing, you know?
So there were many properties in the 80s that Badaracco and Dockenhausen did, so I don't know if we're going to be searching other properties. I'm not sure.
I mean, is there a way to check through permits of jobs they might have done that were kind of, you know, fairly large?
I'm sure our hero's on it, but he doesn't.
Okay.
Our detective does have a clear case of lockjaw. He just does not want to share information with us.
But he's not supposed to. I mean, right?
Right.
Denny,
right.
I mean, that's, Denny, yeah. when you do this, how important it is for, I mean, Beth, you got the case changed from a missing persons, which is
yeah.
amazing,
mm-hmm.
to a homicide.
Right. $50,000 reward.
It's not a missing person case anymore where it sat for a long time.
Right.
Most families that we deal with.
Well, Ernest, you also.
Pat, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I'm just saying,
Ernest,
if there was corruption going on around
yeah.
what happened to your mom, he
mm-hmm.
certainly, the state trooper now, doesn't want any information out. So
right.
I would say that's a good thing.
Right. It is. It just kind of drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Ernest was also in the paper recently with, I guess, a pastor was fraudulently charging. He was up to no good, this pastor. And Ernest Dockenhausen was named as one of the contractors that was overbilling and then given the kickbacks back. So I don't know if charges will be.
I don't know. I would check large properties that he's probably worked on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it looked like you could put cars. Not,
well, I don't
you know.
Care what kind of brain injury you had if you hit a tree. If you buried a woman, I don't think you're going to forget it.
No.
That was his defense, that he had a brain injury and he forgot. You know, he forgets things.
Vito, how difficult is it on these cases when it's a missing person? How does it happen where a case gets to be switched over to a homicide without a body?
Well, what happens is, you know, eventually they want to try to get it active or semi-active, which would allow a new guy to come in, okay, you know, 10, 20 years go by or whatever, and, you know, somebody, new regime comes in. You know, you could have a new commissioner, you could have new captains, whatever it may be, and they say, let's take another look at this, and they can just say at that point, it's active. We really feel this is a murder investigation. This is not a missing persons case. There's too many preponderance of circumstantial evidence going on here. So let's get it back open. Now, your question is, does it happen a lot? No. And you said to her before, she's very fortunate to get it reopened because this is the type
mm-hmm.
of case that would just die and disappear someplace. But
mm-hmm.
even though he's been working on it since 2004, I guess as if I'm the family, I'm saying, well, at least somebody's working on it. And when they get that one piece to put it over the top, maybe they can grab this guy. I mean, because they know at headquarters that this guy did it. And they try to wait for anything else they can pin on him. You know, anything else, whether it's a tax evasion or anything else. And, of course, believe me, they're checking on this other guy here. So, too.
Do you know if Dominic's lawyered up?
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure he's lawyered up. Everyone involved is lawyered up.
Okay, so, but he is an official suspect.
He's an official suspect, yes.
Okay.
That was taken from Ernest's trial.
Okay, now you're also on the, once you explain, you're on the Q Center.
Yeah,
I know that, and the Q Center is an amazing organization. Monica Kaysan, who just goes all over the country and literally has success in finding missing loved ones.
Yes, she is among the heroes. My mother has a handful of heroes, and Monica and the Q Center is definitely one of them. Monica puts her whole life on hold for our families. I don't know where that comes from, but I thank God for her every day.
So you're on the road for the, as far as the tour, they'll come over by you
yes.
and they'll do a search.
Yes, my sister and I are scheduling a rally. It'll be at Hatters Park at 3:30.
What day?
Danbury, Connecticut. It's a Sunday.
Okay.
And Monica
What's
will
the
be
date?
There too. August 22nd at 3:30.
Okay. All right.
At Hatters Park in Danbury. And my mother, she also has a new song that's going to be sung there by the artist. someone's just my best friend who also made a quilt for my mother. That'll be displayed as well.
But they have had tremendous success.
Yeah.
They have.
And Monica has always been there for as long as I've known her. If I need something, that's who I call.
And just to give the listeners, because I know we have a lot of Connecticut people listening tonight, if anybody does have any kind of information about this case, the Connecticut State Police is in charge of it, 860-685-8000.
What do you want to say to us about your mom? That somebody might remember that is important to the investigation that maybe nobody's thought of or that you've had an afterthought about?
I would just like to say we know there's people in our community that know what happened to her. My sister and I know it with all of our heart. And if they knew our mother, they know my mother would have helped anyone. She always did. She was always there when anyone needed anything. And the people just really need to just step up.
So there's no connection for you whatsoever with anybody that you know back in that town?
No. No,
okay.
Not really.
Okay, and you've done with the information and the talking to the detective, you've done that over the phone and you haven't had to go there, right?
Excuse me? Our detective is great.
You haven't had to meet with him in person. He's talked to you over the phone.
Our detective?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
On the case.
Yeah, we've met with him in person.
Okay, but in that area there, I mean, when Monica and the Q Center come out, aren't you going back there or no?
Yes, I'll be back in that area.
Okay.
That's the
so,
town. Danbury's where our mother was born and raised,
so,
where we were all
right,
born and raised.
All right, so why don't, when you go out there, a suggestion is why don't you have some posters made or signs made all over the area?
Right.
You know, try to get there a little bit early and try to put them up as many places as you can, laundromats, you know, convenience stores, gas stations.
Right.
And because maybe, you know, somebody might know something.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody might remember something. And you might as well take advantage of that when you go back.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
You know, it's amazing, Susan, because I hate these cases that go on this long because people die, people move, all kinds of stuff happen. You know,
it's a long time ago. It's 1984.
26 years ago, you know?
That's right. And I was in diapers, you know?
But isn't the only way... Isn't the only way...
Let's not lie in a public forum here.
What, Pat? I'm sorry, Pat.
No, that wasn't me.
Oh, okay, that was...
I just feel like, you know, I was scared for so long, and now I'm past the scared. Now I'm angry, and I want to find my mother. So if I have to go dig her up myself, I will. I just think it's, you know, a lot. We've had to hear a lot of excuses and, you know, even from people that we know what happened, just don't come forward. And I just think there's no excuse for that. If you know that a serious crime was committed, then you're just as guilty as the person that committed the murder.
And sometimes what happens tragically in these cases is that people don't think it because it's none of their business or because, you know, they have other opinions or they have other opinions of Dominic or other family members. They won't come forward, and that's not fair. We're out of time, Mary. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
And good luck with the search. And that's the Q Center, everybody. So thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you.
All right. Okay, Denny, take it away.
Yes, our next case tonight is going to be the death of Sean Allison. On November 20th of 2000, Sean Allison was found dead of a gunshot wound to the face in his cabin in Lapine, Oregon. He was 29 years old. Sean's body was found by Tad Layton Keith Shirley II, a friend of Jessica McEwen, who was a woman Sean had been seeing. Tad said that Jessica's mother asked him to go check on Sean. This is odd to Sean's sister, Rita Allison, because Jessica came to the cabin whenever she wished. So why send Tad? And joining us on Crime Wire tonight is Sean's sister, Rita Allison, to discuss the case. Rita, welcome to Crime Wire.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me.
And I just want to mention at the start that we were going to have our consultant, Peter Hyatt, on tonight regarding some statement analyses that he's done in Sean's case. Unfortunately, where Peter is tonight, he's traveling, and his cell phone service is almost non-existent, he's unable to call in. So he will listen to the rebroadcast of the show from the archives, and he will also be continuing to assist in taking a look at some of the documents in this case. So he sends his apologies that he's unable to join us.
And no worries. That's why I don't own a cell phone.
Vita, let me ask you this now. Could you kind of set the stage for everybody for the day that Sean died? You know, what was going on, what his status was, and how you found out, and fill us in on what happened.
Okay, well, the day that he died. In my heart, I believe that he actually died on November 18th or early Sunday morning, November 19th of 2000. His time of death is listed on his death certificate as 11:36 on November 20th, which was Monday morning. This is the time that Tad calls into the sheriff's department and reports that he's found a dead body.
Mm-hmm.
There were no autopsy or anything done, so a real time of death was never established. I did later find out through, you know, my own investigative things that they had tried to take blood from him, and the blood had already been congealed. And from mortuaries and emergency rooms, I was told by professionals that Sean had to have been dead 24 to 48 hours for that to have occurred, and so I have basis to believe that he died earlier. There's some oddness there in that the Jessica McEwen at the memorial tried to tell me that she hadn't seen him for 2 days, and then she like freaked out and changed that to 5 days. And then later we find out that she did go to dinner with him on Saturday night, and technically she is the last person that we can confirm, and this was through the only good detective sheriff's officer that we had involved in this, that she was seen with him Saturday night, so she is the last person that really saw him actually alive. And so, you know, you go from there. We know that Friday afternoon, Sean was into music, and he was trying to cut his own CD, and he had been, you know, trying to straighten his life up. But Friday afternoon, he was in some kind of a panic. And he went to the Soundsmith, which is where he was cutting his CD, and he was freaking out. The guy told us that he was going, some bad S is going down, and he wouldn't explain to the guy, but he was gathering all his stuff up, and he was just frantic, and he was just scared. The guy told us that he was absolutely terrified. And later that night, and I totally see Sean doing this, He was so scared that he was involved with the Veterans Association, because Sean was a disabled veteran from the Marine Corps, and he had apparently approached a couple of the veterans that he was involved with, and they took him to the hospital because he was very frantic. Well, I think they thought he was suicidal, and so several of the police officers that I believe are way more heavily involved in this than should be were the ones that escorted him to the hospital. We were told by the doctors when the veterans and the police officers were there, Sean was acting just crazy. As soon as they left, he was fine. Now, if someone is brought in Oregon, and I don't know if this is true in any other state, it's a mandatory 7-day hold if they're suicidal, if they're being admitted for, you know, suicide.
It varies,
yeah. They released him early Saturday morning. And I even sent documents to Kim that proved that the doctors were all scared that we were going to sue them. So, I mean, this is all, I have proof of this. The gentlemen that were the veterans went and picked him up. They said that, you know, they saw him Saturday at noon and he was fine. The next thing we know, he's not with us anymore. This is all I know about this, the leading up to, you know, when his body is found. Go ahead.
Rita, so the listeners understand there was no autopsy done, am I correct?
No autopsy done.
And what,
and I, I've,
In fact, you never saw the body. Am I correct that when you got to the scene to
that is
cabin,
a thing of contention, actually, because that's something I just found out recently through another organization that I'm trying to work with.
Uh-huh.
Because we just had a switch of DAs, and so I'm hoping to get to this DA before he gets into office, and I'm working on some stuff with that. The gentleman that I spoke to asked me, and I, you know, it's been 10 years, but I didn't know this, but obviously it's a point. He said to me, what family member was the body released to? And I didn't understand what he was saying, and he said, well, you know, what person in your family actually saw Sean's body? And I said, no one. And he, you know, he asked me that question like 8 times in different ways. And I said, sir, nobody saw Sean's body. And he finally, he got kind of upset with me. He goes, no father, mother, brother, sister, cousin, aunt, uncle, nobody in your family saw Sean's body. And I said, no, sir, because there was a bunch of phone calls made. Now, see, Tad shows up at, and like you said, and why did he go out there, and why did the mom send him out there at around 9 a.m., and we can prove that. He doesn't call the sheriff's department until 11:36. His phone call at 11:36 is the time of death on Sean's death certificate. But there have been friends of friends of friends who have made multiple phone calls. They've called my mother's boyfriend. He has left work, got her, and driven the 40 minutes that it takes to get to where Sean was living. And they show up at the end of the driveway the minute they're removing the body. And, you know, the cop is like, who are you? And mom tells him, and how did you know? They weren't supposed to tell you. And like,
Pat,
what?
Pat Caruso, in this case, can the family try to go through the Freedom of Information Act and get photos of some kind of a photo of the crime scene of the body?
We have photos.
Who made the determination of identity on the body?
Well, no,
somebody,
see, apparently
make...
It was Tad.
He's not officially able to do that.
Yeah, that's what I understand.
There's all these little discrepancies that people, normal people like me don't know.
All right, we're going to take a phone call, guys. Area code 516-852. And for some reason, it's not clicking over.
Hey, Rita, can I ask you a question while she's doing that?
Yes, sir.
It says here, Veronica agreed to have Sean's body cremated. Agreed with who or what?
Well, here's the scenario is mom actually watches them, you know, the body is covered, obviously, but it's being loaded into the back of the hearse to go to the mortuary.
Right.
And she's being dissuaded from seeing Sean's body.
But don't you have to okay it for the funeral director? I mean, you guys.
She goes to the funeral home, and everybody's telling her it's so horrific that she doesn't want to see him.
Even the funeral director says it's so horrific.
She follows him. Okay, well, here's the other thing. Just a few months, I'm guessing maybe 4 or 5, my mom and I tried to track down that actual funeral director. He had sold the mortuary. The new guy almost lost his lunch when we showed up in the parking lot, when he realized who we were, and the actual mortician that had done this had sold the business, moved with no forwarding contact.
Okay, then that business is still there. Can't Vito, Denny, Pat, can't she get a file of the... They take pictures of everybody they prepare. Can't she get the file from that?
Yes, you're going to need a subpoena... Something like somebody needs to be
from the funeral home, even though they paid for the funeral, it's their right to see the records.
There should be records
at the funeral home from the prior owner should still be there.
They should be there.
Area code 516-8.
And you have to
not.
Find out by the state of Oregon. Yeah. Does the state of Oregon require the documents that establish the death certificate and the attending documents? Do they have to be available?
That's a million-dollar question. Area code 516-852. What's your question, please? Welcome to CrimeWire.
I don't have a question. I just wanted to listen. Annie Jacoby had given me the number to listen in. I have a program also.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay. Sorry about that. So,
Susan?
Yes.
No, what's amazing about this is that I'm reading this one paragraph here, and this same paragraph, unfortunately, can be used for every week, for every show that we have done.
Mm-hmm.
Although the police took pictures, they conducted no investigation. No
mm-hmm.
autopsy was performed. No fingerprints were taken. There are no ballistics.
Where are the photos?
We read the same stuff. We should just make a copy of this paragraph and just include it on every week because it's the same stuff. Every week that goes on in these cases. I was looking at this, and I'm saying we just read this the last 3 weeks on different cases. It's incredible, you know?
Rita, how big is this town?
La Pine is pretty small. It's the county, see?
Okay.
Deschutes County is in the heart of Oregon. We're right dead center in the middle. And Bend probably lists 100,000 people, but because of the outskirts and city limits, but... You know, it's probably 250,000 in Bend. La Pine is still pretty small. It is known as the drug hub of Oregon for meth.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the sheriff's department.
What's
and
wrong
they,
with the
they
sheriff?
Run this county. What?
What's wrong? What kind of things has the sheriff done consistently that have been in maybe for other
well,
cases?
I don't know. The sheriff at the time, Sean, died, has been incarcerated for embezzling. I thought it was $250,000, but it was actually
$500,000. It looks like it was a quarter of $1 million. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. No, it was $500,000. And while he was incarcerated, he was found to have stolen guns from the sheriff's department and sold them in the newspaper.
And then what about the DARE officer at La Pine High School was arrested for having sex with teenage girl?
Reitman is the first officer on scene, and Reitman was the dog catcher at the time. And they send the dog catcher to a dead body crime scene. And then Malloy shows up and see all these men, including the one that met my mom in the driveway that said, "What are you doing here? They weren't supposed to tell you." And who is they? Who's not supposed to tell the mother of the dead person?
Denny, you can't hold up. Denny, you came up with some interesting points on this, on the notes and different things. Why don't we go through them? Because we're going to run out of time soon.
Yeah, here's the thing, Rita. We're wondering that, well, there's a whole bunch of things that appear to have been wrong here. It appears this was never treated as a crime scene. And one of the things we're wondering about, according to the death certificate, it stated in there that the deceased put the barrel of the gun in his mouth and pulled the trigger. Then you never saw the body. Do you know from anybody who saw the body that you can trust exactly how badly he was injured? In other words, we're trying to figure out where the blood spatters and blood were located throughout the cabin. They were on opposite sides of the room. In other words, there was substantial blood on the refrigerator and the cabinets on one side of the room. Your brother was found on a sofa on the opposite side of the room. There was blood in both locations. The theory from Chief White was that Sean was more or less in the middle of the room when he did this. And we're trying to figure out whether, you know, how badly he was injured. Was he in condition to walk after shooting himself, to walk from the middle of the room around a coffee table and lay down on the couch and carrying the gun with him? You know.
There's no way, sir. No, because I think the photographs are in the packet I sent you.
Yeah.
That's all we got was photographs, and that's part of what really, I'm approached to the memorial service, and I am told he did not kill himself. He was murdered. And these people were scared, and they changed their stories, and that goes on through this whole last 10 years. When you get looking at the photographs, and it did take me a little while to look at them because now I have to live with them forever in my head. His face is gone. And from the police officers, you know, some of them say he put it in his mouth. Some of them say he placed it on his cheek.
But there's two shots, right? Two shots.
No, well, we're only told one, but I'm telling you, I have always had suspicion that there was two. And
you know why I say that?
Because
you know what I thought maybe in Vito and Denny, I don't know if I'm wrong, but you know, if you're running and then they get you at the side of the cheek or the side, and then they do it again. And then they take better aim, because that's where you would fall over and then move over. It just seemed to make more sense.
I'm telling you, I've always wondered.
I'm sorry, Vito, what?
Yes.
No, that's all right. The only problem is that the darn death certificate says deceased placed the rifle in his mouth and pulled the trigger. Now, where did they get that from then, you know?
Well, see, Decker is the one that meets Mom in the driveway, and he's an assistant deputy coroner or some darn thing, and he's allowed to be on scene, but he is not legally allowed to release that body for burial. The coroner never saw him, and in my notes and in my statements at the end, we went to visit the coroner, and he kept us, and he's a state official. He had no legal right to do this. Of course, we didn't know this when it happened. He kept us waiting in his medical office, because he's a real doctor, or thinks he is, for 5 hours, and his office is empty, and he charged us $60 to talk to him, and he left his door open, and my mom and I heard him talking to somebody, and he was saying, "They're there. They're here. What should I tell them?" And I think he thought, you know, after 5 hours, we would go away. And he
Have you gone to the prosecutor there in the county?
I have the DA. I told them about the officers, the DARE officer, and everybody. And I sent proof to Kim last night.
Okay, all right. This isn't working for you the way you're doing it, and I think everybody would agree. You need to start getting some stuff. I know you're busy and you work. You need to start putting some stuff together. If you can get statements from people, if you can get them videotaped, if you can put, do you have a website up for your brother?
Excuse me?
Do you have a website up for your?
Mom has a memorial site up for him, and we are on realcrimes.com.
You need to have, it's $10 on Google. Do justice for Sean, okay? Put the website up, get yourself a Facebook, start asking for tips and information, put it out there. That nothing will happen if people come forward. Start preparing it. Oregon has a cold case unit at the Attorney General's office. Once you put this stuff together on your brother's case, not what you think, but what you know for sure, do the Freedom of Information Act and try to get as much as you can. Don't get frustrated. Don't snap back, because that's what they want. Okay? And then start putting together the case, because everybody's coming in 10 minutes after the movie's over. And in order for somebody to reopen this thing and reinvestigate it, it needs not to be in that small county, and it needs either a prosecutor at a state level or the Attorney General's office.
Well, in Oregon, and I have contacted the Attorney General.
You have to give them the documentation. You have to give them the statements. Otherwise, they're not listening. You have to give them what you have.
That's what I'm planning on doing with the new DA.
Okay.
Because
but
the,
do it first
DA,
before you meet with the DA. But you have to. You should prepare all these things first, because then you're your best advocate for your brother, and prepare that way.
I have everything you're talking about. I've written everything down.
Okay. All right. And then other people, so make sure it's typed out nicely. I know it's a lot of work. And then if you can get people to make statements as well, because it goes to the fact of when he died, what happened. What people really
know. I
know
that, but what you're not realizing is that people are scared to death because...
So you're going to go to a different level. I do realize it. I do this every day. I'm talking about the higher level. Don't go to
the guns and the badges. No, we're talking about the sheriff's department here.
Vito, help me here.
Well, no, I mean, the problem here, and I understand both sides of it, the problem here is always usually a small town. The small town, first, you got twofold. Everybody knows everybody. And number two, even if they were trusting, they don't get these cases. So, I mean, you know, we're 10 years now in this one. We got 36 years worth of unsolved cases tonight here. 26 and 10.
I know.
You know, ridiculous. So, no, I realize, Rita, what you're saying. The only problem is that... You know, it's sometimes it could be a dangerous situation, but see, I'm the type, you know what I tell my clients here after 23 years of being a PI? Take the offensive. And many times people say to me, but I don't want to get this person mad, or you know what these people will do? And I say to them, the only way you're going to get anything accomplished is to go after people. And that's the whole key, because small towns, we have this conversation every week. Everybody knows every freaking body in the town. And somebody went to high school, and this one is good friends, and this one married to the cousin. And basically that's how it goes here.
And I understand. Can I please let me say something since,
sure.
You know, you mentioned the PI thing. Now, here's the thing. I am not afraid of nothing. I drove logging truck for a really long time, the only female in the state doing it. I'm pretty much not afraid of nothing. My mom has to keep me reined in to not stir the pot on this thing. We hired private investigators, and they basically gave us back the same information that I had already given them. And then they requested, and these guys are big, bad, think they're all tough, what up, you know, that kind of person, met my mom in Lapine, and this is what they say to her. And I sent the report to Kim. She's got it. They tell my mother, Sean was murdered. But if we keep investigating this, we'll never be able to work in this county again.
Well, they shouldn't have got involved in the first place.
Exactly.
That's the case. Because what did they
exactly.
expect, what did they expect to find out when your mother or whoever paid the money to start off with?
Oh,
they,
trust me. My mom got her money back because I was livid.
Yeah, if
now,
I don't
here's
get involved
the
in the case, there's a conflict or there's something like that when I don't get involved in the case. But to get in the case and then say, well, yeah, he definitely was murdered. But guess what? You know, we can't really go any farther because then we're not going to get a – it's like a lot of times the good reporters, the good investigative reporters on the newspapers, some of them have – the good ones don't care. But a lot of the people have said to me – well, Vito, if I go to the police department and really question that lieutenant, then from now on when I want to go in there to get any information, they're not going to give me anything. Well, I'll say, well, what do you want from me? I mean, you know, it doesn't make any kind of sense. I mean,
well, honestly,
I can't speak for every private detective in the country, but that's not the norm of how it's supposed to be done, and the people I know don't work like that. They go so far, then they said, well, we can't go any farther because then we'll get in trouble.
Well, it's not just that, sir. It's do we really want to end up like Sean? And my mom is rightfully concerned about that. And
that's a good
and
point.
I guess as a public statement, I would like to tell you, you know, if something happens to my mother or I or my son or whoever, and they try to say it's a suicide, I just want you to know it wasn't.
Well, it's in the archives.
You know, I mean,
now.
This
it's
happens. You don't
forever,
think
so.
That this kind of thing can happen until it does.
Right.
Rita?
Yeah,
Rita?
Sir.
Yeah, just
yeah.
Our friend Gene Cervantes is in the chat room from Citizens Against Homicide, and
mm-hmm.
he just says here that if you would like, they could, on their website, feature Sean's profile on their website and in their newsletter, and includes contact info for anyone who might have information about his case. Is that something you'd be interested in their assistance?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That would be great.
What I will do is I will send you, Gene Cervantes your email information, and he can get in touch with you and work out the details if you'd like.
Oh, definitely. You're welcome to share my information with anybody who thinks that they might want to help us.
Okay. And
because we're dead in the water. I mean, basically, speaking to the getting the case reopened, you know, we've been told, and it speaks to the Rhonda Reynolds case. If you can't get the suicide designation changed through a court of law and it says suicide, nobody will help you.
That's right, and I worked on that case. And you know, but things do move along. And
I know they do. I'm not giving up. I'll never give up.
Well, that's why you're saying get it all documented and provide that to the officials, because once it's documented in their face, that's how I helped get my mother's change to a homicide. Once you have it all in their face, they really can't ignore it.
Well, that's
Crystal.
My whole hope in doing what I'm doing with I'm putting it in a more neater presentation to take to this new DA in our county. I mean, this was a major upset. The old DA is part of that old guard, and I couldn't believe it when he lost and this new guy came in. It gave me a ray of hope, and I am going after that. I'm not just waiting for somebody else to fix this for me. I am going after it.
Pat Caristo.
Yes, sir.
Now, you've had a chance to look at least some of the documentation and so on. What is your opinion as a veteran investigator about this whole deal? In other words, how the scene, I hesitate to call it a crime scene because it was never apparently treated as such, but the death scene and then... you know, what's happened since, and you've heard some of the advice and discussion that we've been telling Rita. I'd like your opinion on all of that.
Suicides aren't suicide is not technically a crime, but it should be treated as a crime scene until it's determined to be so. I would write a formal letter, a certified letter, requesting that the status of the manner of death be changed to undetermined until a further investigation can verify that. Get this. It may not happen, but I would send the certified letter and at least ask for that. I was wondering if Sean or Tad had any relationship with the police. Were they informants? Were they doing any kind of working undercover, confidential informants with the police there?
I don't believe that they were confidential informants. I know a number of the players knew, not Sean, Jessica, Tad, whatever, they knew the police intimately, and they got away with stuff because they knew them intimately.
But there has to be a reason why they're willing to go to this much trouble to cover this.
Yeah, up. Because we've been told that if they shut down the drug trafficking through Lapine, it will ruin their economy.
Well, that's what I'm saying, that somebody was involved in the drug trafficking, either as a confidential informant or that kind of thing. I would be interested to know a little more about Ted and verify that did Jessica's mother really ask.
But you're looking at this as confidential informant, as in they're trying to stop the drug trade. No, it's the opposite. It's they were encouraging the drug trade, and the police were benefiting from it.
In Albuquerque, I have multiple cases where the people that are dead in the unsolved crimes were all snitches, and they end up dead. That's what I'm saying.
Well,
is there a possibility?
The baby that is supposedly Sean's, which is not, because we have DNA proof, it's not. Sean was furious when she wouldn't let him see the baby, and he was threatening to turn them all in.
Threatening to turn the drug involvement in.
All of it, yes.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. There's something that caused this to happen and for everything to get shut down.
Well, and then they finally realized that if Sean was dead, because he'd signed the birth certificate, that he was going to get, Jessica gets, I believe, about $1,600 a month between his VA and his Social Security for a baby that is not his. And she is now 10, and she is part of our family, and she will always be part of our family. She doesn't need to be blood. But can you imagine how much fun this is going to be telling her the real truth when she's 18?
Well, it is sad. But
yeah,
there's something that's interfering with you getting the information that you need. But have you done a formal request to have the manner of death changed from suicide to undetermined?
We haven't done that because we have been
thwarted
by
just
almost every attorney in this state.
Just do your own letter and submit the request. Because all they can say is nobody ever asked us to do it.
Who do I submit that to?
To whoever is the person who authorized that manner, the coroner or whatever it is in your jurisdiction. Even though you have no respect for them or whatever, still they are the agency. Send a certified letter. Don't go into a lot of explanation. Just say, it is our request that the manner of death be changed from suicide to undetermined and a more investigation be conducted, period. Let them say no. Then you have a place to begin.
Well,
everybody, we're out of time. The show's going to get cut off in about a minute.
Okay.
I want to thank everybody for being on, and thank you for the CrimeWire team, our research producer, Kim Colton, public relations team at Imagine Publicity, Delilah. Our next show will be Tuesday, August 10th, 2010. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases, crimes that interrupt, and wreak havoc on families looking for answers, seeking justice. Thank you to Pat Caristo, our resident Crime Wire expert.
Thank you for joining us tonight on Crime Wire. We always welcome your support and value you as our guest. If you would like to have your case be featured on Crime Wire, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. Or to hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show, go to www.crimewire.blogspot.com. Turn on the volume at your computer, and the show will automatically play.
And remember, we ensure that your voices will be heard when there is nowhere else to turn. Visit our website at www.crimewiresite.com. Good night, and God bless from the Crime Wire team.
Thank you.
Until next week.
Good night,
Thank
everybody.
You, guys.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you so much.